Media Network.
Three, two,
and we're back.
And we are back.
It's Roast with KM Bell and Tom.
I think it's been far too long since we've done one of these.
It's been way too long, and one of the reasons is because
it's me. You know, it's all me.
Life is what happens. Life is what happens when you make plans.
Life finds a way
to get in between the nooks and the crannies.
Of being a pain in the ass.
Forcing itself in between those nooks and crannies to become the tick upon the underside of the calf, drawing blood or whatever the hell it is that it does.
Sure. I think he just went into Bible study, so I kind of zoned out there at the end. Something about a calf.
I'm a little drawl.
Are we doing idolatry? Are we on idolatry? Because I didn't prepare for that.
I didn't prepare for anything.
Behold the word of the Lord.
Because the Lord Jesus, and remember Gouda and Adam. Remember the Lord and his son Jesus.
Gouda. Because
no matter, it's good enough to eat him.
Jesus wept. So
where to begin? It's another day in the land of fuckery. So all I can say is last couple of days we've been busy hauling out stuff from rehabbing the house that we've been doing for over the last 4 or 5 years. But yesterday was kind of interesting. My son wants to go to this camp in the summer. And this camp is going to cost several hundred dollars. So in order to do this, he was supposed to raise certain kinds of money, which he did to a point. But yesterday he got what is called a gimme in the business. And what that means is if he could haul away probably 50 bags worth of plastic bottles of like water bottles, you know, that people buy, drink at the health club and then toss. 50 bags with approximately about 100 bottles inside each one, and take it to recycling. That would be fine. So we make the trip, we get, you know, we keep the van that we had rented for another day, that the entirety of that whole thing was all about keeping the van for another day. We got to, you know, we hauled everything out to the trash day one, day two. We're just thinking maybe we have enough room here. We could stick all the bags in there. We make our way down about 10, 15 miles down the road, pick up these bags and take it to recycling. In Oregon, you can get about $10 per plastic bottle, you know, for recycling. The idea was, of course, to get to the recycling center and say, "Hey, could you just help us estimate each bag, and then maybe we could, you know, figure out an exchange." But no, we had to go first, wait in line for a machine, and then hand by hand put in every single plastic bottle by hand, 4,750 of them, every single one of them. So I helped, although my son did get into it, and although my son did find a way to make it work together, we spent over two hours, helping this planet recycle so that he could finally get his money, and then now he's going to go to his lovely little camp over the summertime.
Well, that's delightful. Look at all of that.
And the camp is located, it was purchased by some people the previous owners of this camp is in Central Oregon. And one of the previous owners of this camp was the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh, which was where they had... Yes, where they had that location that if you've seen this documentary on Netflix about what happened in Oregon in the 80s,
Oh my God, I've been meaning to watch that, and I haven't because I keep getting sidetracked by Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
It's really good. It's an excellent documentary about what happened and the conflict that happened between, the Rajneeshpuram is what they called it. It used to be called it's back to Antelope, Oregon. And, you know, that whole thing came a couple of years where they occupied the place and then everything collapsed and they all ran away. Soon some of them to, you know, have time, show up in prison. Some of them, you know, who went on to be in this documentary that you can all watch about. But now the place is occupied by an entirely different organization. And that's where he's going to go for the summer. And there you go. Because that's what committed dads do.
Yeah.
5,005. And I'm just fried.
That's fantastic. So, congratulations. So
that's my, you know, I have to tell you the, Jeff, the audio on this is, pretty good.
Sounds good. Okay.
Doesn't sound too crummy.
No. Sounds good. Sounds all right.
But enough of me. You, sir, go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot new. You'll like this, and you know me. I don't tend to filter very much.
No, you're pretty much straight on.
So, having an argument with my ex, who told me that someone she went on a date with said that everything I've done as far as my shows go is nothing but a 1-year-long pity party. So I've gone back over some shows to put together a little other thing I'm working on, and I'm listening through it. It's like, you know what? I have, and I believe you've joined me on this adventure a couple of times. Had some complaints. I'm
a willing participant
of being old and what that means in both a professional and a personal capacity. I know that we have flogged on the shows. We've flogged the Patreon quite hard because I'm trying to raise enough money to get to an office I can use as a studio. That's not in a common area with a, and it's not loud, and start actually, you know, billing out my talents as services to make the shows better, do advertising, stuff like that. And I'm going through and it's like the closest thing I can get to a pity party is you and me talking about actual events that happen in our lives. As far as, maintaining gainful employment, when we are of the artistic bent and not the retail capitalist overlord type.
Well, let me just take a little quick detour on this, and to whoever may be still monitoring this, you know, for any kind of whining. Okay. This is therapy. All right. This is how I deal with life. I actually somehow am able to speak to you, Jeff, and I'm able to articulate specific things that I find outrageous or things that I'm quite disappointed in. But nevertheless, stuff that I find is a detriment either to the human experience or us moving forward as humans and into a better place. And this is therapy. And this is the reason why I do it. And I understand there's a difference in our shows between those parts where we have been told, you know, where we whine and complain. And yes, we do. Joyfully. I love the fact that we can actually do that.
Well, what's fun is that it's usually
the articulation of outrage over things that are not normal and need to be identified.
Well, sure. But it's fun to me. It's that right now, when we do get comments or complaints about it, it's either young people who aren't here yet and are using this as an excuse to blame us, as opposed to, you know, cover your ass because this is on its way, you know, or people trying to bang my ex-wife. So I don't.
Oh, my God. I can't even.
So I don't put a lot of stock in it. And I went back and I'm like, no, it hasn't been a pity party. It really hasn't. It's been fucking hilarious is what it's been. No matter how mad we get, we'd still seem to find humor in how much the world picks on folks that are a little bit, gray at the temples, as it were. And so I guess the whole wraparound of this as we hit the 10-minute mark is I haven't been self-censoring for the last week as much as I have been just aware. And when you're aware of something that has been tainted with a negative context with the way that it was handed to you, I think you do make substantial changes. I think you do maybe subtle changes, including at one point literally whining about people saying that I was whining. And
that's what this is about. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Just want to let you know, thank you very much for joining us here on today's show. It has been a joy.
But I'm not going to rename any of the shows to the Welcome to the Pity Party. And the truth is, I just don't give a fuck. If you and in listening annoys you, why
are
you listening? And if your goal is to bang my ex-wife, perhaps, I don't know, leave me out of it. I have.
For those who might happen to think that we do whine on this, yes, indeed, we do.
Well, no,
and
we complain.
It is a way for us in order to cope with matters. And if you do listen to it, you must enjoy the fact that we're whining. And you must really be wallowing within the liquid frustration of it all, and actually soaking in it, and must be just saying to yourself, this is the greatest podcast I have ever heard in my entire life. I love this. And I must tell the principals, of this podcast immediately that they are whining, because I am enjoying this so much.
I guess, I don't know. Like I said, it's free.
You got to start somewhere,
I suppose. Yeah, I
mean, what the fuck? It's free.
You know,
it's fucking free. What do you expect? If you were paying money for it, we wouldn't whine.
Basically, what it is it's some people using a public restroom and deciding they don't like the flavor of the toilet water. So next time,
use a flavored straw.
Yeah, next time bring Kool-Aid powder. Whatever you got to do, pal.
Please use the tank, for crying out loud.
Where do you get the flavor?
Out of the bowl.
Right. Hello. So.
Hi, how do you do?
That out of the way.
Have you rebooted your home router? Because then this way you can avoid your malware attack that the FBI tells you to. Have you?
No, I'm getting a different. Well, you know what? Yeah, I've got Comcast. I reboot my router 2-3 times a week. So
good. So,
You were being serious? I thought you got like a spam. What are you talking about?
I was being serious because I was just, we're just, I don't really think we have a too much of an established menu of things to talk about today, but we do. I mean, there are certain things, there are 1500 missing children. There are other things that are happening, but, we haven't done this in a while, and so we're catching up. And so I just think it's just the more that we're able to, I don't know, just rap. It's going to be great.
Sure. But I mean, I got topics.
All right.
I got topics. You got topics. But I'll tell you what. Let's finish off this half an hour with a little bit of history, because I haven't done that in quite a while.
Okay.
But let us, if we will, jump into the Wayback Machine, Sherman.
Yeah. Drizzle, drazzle, drazzle, drone. Time for this one to come home. Wait, that's not
Peabody and Sherman.
Mr. Turtle. Yeah, that's, yeah.
Anyway, that's regardless, to the 31st of July of 1921 was an auspicious day for the world, though it didn't quite know it yet. A young man was born in England. His name was Peter Benison. Are you familiar with Peter Benison?
Please inform me.
Well, Peter grew up in London. He was Jewish. His name was actually Peter James Henry Solomon. He was the only son of British-born Harold Solomon and Russia-born Flora Bennison. Da?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, his dad died in the army. He took his mother's name because it wasn't Jewish, and this was, let's face it, England in the 30s, 40s, 50s, etc. Went to college in Oxford, went to serve in World War II in the intelligence corps, got married, just basically had the life that a man born in the upper echelons of money, you know, some money in England in this time had. He ticked all the check marks, including changing his name to something less Semitic. Went to law school and practiced law for several years until he had a bad day one day. In 1961, he was reading the newspaper and he found out about these two students, Portuguese students from Coimbra. They'd been sentenced to 7 years in prison for raising their glasses in a toast to freedom during the regime of Antonio de Oliveira Salazar. That was the Portuguese state police. This was deemed an anti-Portuguese matter, and the two were jailed, and were going to be jailed up to 8 years. So Peter Bennison, wrote a couple of letters. He wrote to David Astor, editor of The Observer, and ended up writing an article, an op-ed, called The Forgotten Prisoners. Basically, it was him asking people that were reading the letters or reading his article, his op-ed, to send letters to Portugal and expressing you know, their disappointment with these two kids getting put in jail. And it happened. And what this was the beginning of Amnesty International, founded by, Peter Bennison, with this one act of being upset. And there's a lot of history in there as far as that went. I'm not going to hit all of it. But talking about Amnesty International, their entire aim is trying to get, you know, freedom, justice, amnesty for prisoners of conscience. And by prisoners of conscience, we're talking about political radicals, artists, podcasters, radio personalities, famous media people. And a lot of times it's people that are under target by religion, dominant religion of the kind, torture. Anti-torture. And you mentioned the 1500 kids and we covered this week on the Left Show. And I will admit to having a colossal tantrum. One of my biggest, I think I've ever recorded. And my tantrum wasn't so much pointed at the Trump administration, because we know, honestly, that they have no moral compass. We know that. It's no fucking secret that these people do not care, that they are acting in a way that is the early budding, you know, flower of fascism. And I don't say that in a desk poundy, ha-ha, sort of Alex Jonesy way. This is how fascism works.
This is how fascism starts.
You belittle
there are other things, incrementally, bit by bit, piece by piece,
which I'm going to cover right now. So what we're looking at is, first of all, we dehumanize people that are different. And by different, I mean, for the most part, not white, claiming to be Christian. Okay. The train full of animals coming up from the South, that sort of thing. The animal, allegory is one pulled almost word for word from old Hitler speeches about people who were not German or were not, you know, white or were not part of that, you know, ideal he seemed to think that he had, even though he himself did not share it. I like pointing out that he was a short, brunette, brown-eyed, micropenis peckerhead who just really seemed to have a thing for really tall blonde guys. And so my tantrum at the 1500 or about the 1500 and starting of course with Santorum. I don't know if you caught his, they're not really lost. We just don't know where they are.
Yesterday came on TV, and when he made that statement, the panel just exploded. Now,
even Bill Crystal, who apparently is growing a conscience in his old age, I think he wants to go to heaven.
Now, 2006 was when Santorum lost by 16 points his seat in the Senate in as he was a senator from Pennsylvania. Ever since then, right. He's not only been the subject of ridicule, as which he is. Always should be for his relativistic morality, and I'm sure if these were 1500 fetuses, he'd be screaming and passing laws if he was still in power,
or he'd be spending the night sleeping with the fetuses.
That's right, because he brings them home.
You remember that, don't you?
Yep.
Him and his wife spent the night with the miscarriage.
They brought home, they decided that they would bring, this is sounds gruesome and strange and very, very twisted, but what happened was they had suffered the tragedy of a miscarriage, but I don't know whose decision it was, but they decided to bring, I can't even go on with this. This is just, I can't even go there. Brought that baby home to them so that they could spend the last few moments together. And that's how they were able to cope to deal with that.
There's no moments. You don't have more moments. There's no moments. There's Rick Santorum being a creepy motherfucker and then wanting everyone else to be as creepy as he is. And him deciding that Jesus has ordained him to be that creepy motherfucker and that everybody else needs to be as creepy as he is. You do not sleep with the dead. That's how we get zombies. You know?
Well, we've seen the Chucky movies and we know that's for sure.
It is creepy and fucked up and weird. There's a reason we don't hold open casket funerals in people's living rooms anymore. It's because it's fucked up. We just don't do it. Everything's regulated. Now, granted, part of that is obviously the greediest kind of capitalism is that of a funeral home director. Make no mistake about it. But I got mad at Democrats. Very, very mad at Democrats because there was some sort of a sporting event this weekend. What was it? Ah, yes. The Indianapolis 500, one of the most watched road races in the world, right? Especially in America. And as that went on, there were zero ads run by, I don't know who would be a good organization for this, the DNC, about 1,500 missing children. I have reached a point now where there are people that talk about this is a tragedy and we shouldn't make points or forward movement with tragedy. But if not, to use a tragedy that we are not responsible for to try and make it so more tragedies do not happen, at what fucking time do we have the moral obligation to talk uncomfortably about uncomfortable things?
We have the moral obligation to talk about this, Jeff, because this is a policy that was enacted. And in a speech by Jeff Sessions, initiated that they were going to separate parents and children a while ago. This is not a law.
In 2017.
This is their policy.
Yeah.
This is the policy. Okay. So maybe you haven't seen it. For instance, Karnes County Residential Center in Texas, it's run by a contracting group. They actually have a prison bus just for babies.
Yep.
Go on.
Yep. And on abused children. Trump himself has said that they are not innocent, that immigrant children are future criminals. The Border Patrol has been accused of sexually and physically abusing the children detainees that have been separated by their parents. We have lost track.
What that paperwork? What do they do? What has been known about that now?
Well,
any records of that can be destroyed.
Of course.
Their policy. This is about as far as they want. And now think about how close to fascism. Think about how close to authoritarianism this is. Think about how what difference is this between any other major regime that has taken out these kind of actions right. against people that they want in their country.
Right. But here we are.
But here we are.
Here we are. Democrats fucking silent. The noises that are being made are by a handful of representatives on Twitter. We are watching the dismantling of journalistic credibility of mouth by an administration pushing their own version of insane fake Tanner fascism, while at the same time watching as media and journalism shows this administration how to better and more effectively tie the noose they will hang themselves with.
Right.
And not everybody is fucking Jake Tapper.
No.
And that's part of the problem. We have a huge deal, a huge right. problem with the false equivalencies of, well, both of them. Well, Democrats never lost 1,500 kids. And then turned around and said, they're not really lost. We just don't know where they are. And it doesn't matter that they're lost.
They say because this is what they're coming out with this morning is because the Republicans are coming out and saying I think it was something like the vicious criminal policies of the Democratic administrations allowed this to happen. So what they do is that they not only lie about it, but then they point the blame at the party that is not in power.
Because it's funny that these kids didn't go missing until 2017, when Republicans had control of every fucking thing. But let's go ahead and try and blame the black guy some more. Oh, what are we doing? We've lost 1,500 kids in a way that, oh, I don't know. What is that ring of? Oh, yeah, the shadow of slavery and how we used to separate those children from their parents because they were fucking property and animals compared to white folks.
Yes.
And we are redoing that. And then who are you blaming it on? You're blaming it on the black guy. Just like your fucking ancestors did out on their plantations when they're like, well, if they weren't jungle savages, we wouldn't have been able to steal them, would we? Mm-hmm. And that is all they have. They are returning openly, finally, I suppose, to the insanely racist roots that their party has been built on ever since the 60s when the parties switched ideologies. And the Democrats became, far less racist. But I swear to God, these George Lakoff Democrats, I've had enough. I've had enough of being polite. I've had enough of ignoring the insults and the catcalls of the Republicans because I know I have been in marketing, communications, and advertising my whole fucking life. I know how effective it is. I know what a good job the Republicans are doing at blaming people who aren't doing anything for all the world's problems, whether that be Democrats, whether that be, brown folks, black folks, red folks, you name it. I'm watching that all, and what I see is intellectual masturbation that never reaches conclusion. I am watching millions, tens of millions, upwards of billions of dollars being spent to not win anything, to not achieve change. How quickly after Obama was elected did they take apart the only apparatus that had been showing any sort of a growth rate across the United States with the 50 state partnership, the state party partnership, to turn it back into a re-election campaign machine? Fine, that's your prerogative. But as we did that, how quickly did the Dems out in the states, including our very own Jim Matheson here in Utah, that blue dog, how quickly did they run away? Did they abandon anything to do with democratic principles so that they could placate people that were afraid of the black guy that had won the election. The responsibility falls at the feet of those who commit the crime, but those whose silence permits it, and those whose cowardice permits it, and those whose chicken-shittedness, you know, and unwillingness to fight to maintain power in a powerless group permits it. Democrats are guilty of complacency and their silence.
And expecting that when you have people who, once you attain the power, you have to work to keep the power. And what that means is keeping people engaged. And the greatest, well, I would say this is a consistent conversation that we have had over several years, even going back to this show, way back, the fact that everybody dropped the ball and assumed that when you read stuff in the press saying like, this is the start of a couple of decades of power. No, what happens immediately is the other side mobilizes and does everything it can to take down that power, to negate it, to stop it. And you saw it. You saw it not just in the most fabricated kind of ways, like the Tea Party coming out of nowhere. That was a complete astroturf operation, followed by the Republicans gaining the House back, and then the Senate, and then stopping cold every single thing. While as the 2016 election ramped up, the vile hatred, the racism, all the things that you thought that were moved on from, but they weren't, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
They all rose to the surface and overwhelmed everything.
Including any sense of decency, morality, or courage in people that have a donkey next to their name.
The
Democrats are responsible in being complicit for the bullshit that went on and being too fucking tame, too fucking nice, too fucking polite, and too fucking weak to do or say anything in an effective manner as a goddamn team. We're the Democrats, for fuck's sake. Collective bargaining is our goddamn birthright. And we abandoned it when the black guy got elected, and we have done nothing since. The insane candy assness of this fucking party and of the left and of the progressive left and the liberal left and everybody on the left is what let the belief in the sense, the common sense of American intelligence, whatever that means to you, that there's no way that haunted pile of discarded clown makeup could become the president of the United States. And when guys, myself included, but so many more, I mean, keep in mind, when I'm talking about so many more, I'm talking about hundreds in a country full of 380 million fucking people. When we stood up and pointed and said, what the fuck is going on? We were chased off. We were shunted aside. We were dragged through the mud. We had all of our pretty party favors stripped from us, and we were kicked out the door. Don't come play anymore. You're too negative. The way that you talk makes us sad. We don't want to be sad.
You're whining.
It's a pity party. And then we flash forward to a year and a half later. The fucker's in the Oval Office. He's tearing things apart. 2 years later, we've misplaced 1,500 fucking kids in a country that really has a problem with the exportation of children to do sex work all over the fucking world. I know that because I spent 3 years working in advocacy to make that stop. I know what's going to happen with a good fucking proportion of these kids, and the fact that a guy like Rick Santorum could pull out his fucking American Jesus and wave it around and say that Republicans aren't responsible for losing 1,500 kids. We just don't know where they are right now. And for Trump to pop up and say, it doesn't matter that we lost 1,500 kids because one day they would be criminals. Whereas when you spend a childhood abusing and raping a little kid, the chances that that kid is going to become some sort of a menace to society, and justifiably fucking so, become exponentially larger. Just in the same way that when we kill over 1 million people in the Middle East And we say we only have 4,000, you know, dead people because we don't count people that aren't American. We breed contempt. And right now we have shown ourselves to be less than so many people in history that used to be less than us. We are racing for the bottom. We are in a sprint to become Milosevic, you know, Mussolini, Yamamoto. I don't know if we'll ever hit Pol Pot, but we have had that in our history with the Native Americans. We just keep returning to the worst versions of ourselves. And those of us that say we should be bigger, we should be better, we should do more. Like you and I, sir, you know, are told that we are unpatriotic and we should stay in the fucking locker room.
Mm-hmm. Stay in your lane.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's take a break right here and then come back and see if we can cheer this up a little bit. Hey folks, Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course...
The truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests, good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the seventh draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, give Shepard rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute. Whoops. Welcome to the CoffeeCast. Remember, you can download a fresh CoffeeCast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next podcast brew, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The CoffeeCast Podcast.
What do you miss when you miss The Left Show?
Huckabee, being a former pastor.
Yeah.
And the biggest mouthpiece for the Christian right, has proven himself time and again to not be a Christian because he believes that Levitical law is absolute and was never removed by Christ.
Right.
So he's a rabbi.
Yeah.
And therefore not Christian.
Yeah. Yes. He's Rabbi Huckabee.
Why not? Then he gets to eat better deli food.
Oh. Haven't the Jews been through enough?
Yeah. Oh.
That was a good point. Good point.
I am pretty sure.
Was that
I know
one.
We got a little bit to go, but I am pretty sure Taylor just won the show.
Fresh episodes every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and theleftshow.com.
course, what you were just talking about, it is something that has been weighing a little bit on my mind, and I think I've seen a few interesting details of what has been happening here. I think that I can rightly say in some ways that I think the force of what has happened, the revanche politics, the idea that what seems to be happening again and again and again in this effect, and I don't want to connect this effect with the name of the person who's in the White House, but there is an interesting piece up at NBC that connects white American intolerance and support for authoritarianism. And the idea is that there's research that's been done, that when intolerant white people fear democracy may benefit marginalized people, people who aren't them, people who may be poor, people who may be of a different color, different religion, they abandon their commitment to democracy. Think about that for a second. So okay. I'm not certain if you, okay, I'll just rip on a little bit of this.
No, I'm thinking about it. I was giving you your second.
And you know, jumping into this, like since the founding of the United States, politicians and pundits have warned that a partisanship is a danger to democracy. Oh my God. George Washington worried that political parties would allow cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men to rise to power and subvert democracy. Especially a lot of that cunning. More recently, many political observers are concerned that increasing political polarization, oh no. This is what I get from certain people that I know, that they are so worried that we can't join hands and sing and stuff like that and find the center.
We can once we beat them to the ground.
On left and right, on left, oh, the both sides, which is weak, a weak. When you have run out of argument, okay, then you trot out the old both sides bullshit, makes compromise impossible and leads to the destruction of democratic norms and institutions.
Let me throw a little nugget in there.
Please.
Are both parties a little fucked up and weird and a little bit selfish and self-centered? Absolutely. Of course they are.
They're human and they make mistakes.
But when Democrats are corrupt or Democrats are fucking up, more poor children have something to eat every day. And that... I want to
let you know, Jeff, that when you see stuff, and I have seen stuff in my party, even on a state level, when there is the hint of corruption, when there is the hint of anything that may be inappropriate and wrong, it is brought immediately to attention. And if you really are in the wrong, you're gone.
Blagojevich.
John Kitzhaber. John Kitzhaber was the governor of Oregon, coming around for the second time, approaching his second another term. In fact, I think he just won another term when it was found out that his girlfriend was receiving a number of favors, and because of this created conflicts of interest, because policy was being made because of her proximity to Kitzhaber. She had certain advantages, and her interests related, of course, to policy, but policy that benefited people. Nevertheless, still, it benefited her in a way that it did not, that appeared unseemly. And as pressure grew and as Kitzhaber resisted, what occurred is one thing led to another, and Kitzhaber was gone quickly. The governor, the head of the Democrats in the Senate and in the House approached him and said, "This isn't going to stand. You got to go. And I don't care what you think about this. I think a lot of it also had to do because this retrenched Democratic opinion that, you know, God forbid any one of us, you know, looks bad. You know, we don't all want to go down. That's a bad place to be. Yeah. That's not value. Those aren't values. That's like looking out for your political self." And so I can give you a perfect example that, you know, the Kitzhaber example. But if you want to, you know, fill in on the end of that, go ahead.
No, I just got, you know, you've got, what was it, Blagojevich. You've got Anthony Weiner. You've got, what was his name?
Right.
Jefferson down in Louisiana.
Yeah, definitely. There are a couple. There are others. There are others. They are there.
Yeah, I mean, it's, that's really it, is it's like they pop up and we run them the fuck out. You know, using a gubernatorial example here, you know, back in 2016, the governor of Utah, Gary Herbert, was recorded, and that recording was shared with the media where he was basically like, you bet, I'll do it for money. Available Jones was his thing. He was a guy who would always take money for anything. You know, if you guys want to bring me a lobbyist, as soon as they cut a check, they've got access. Bring them on. Bring them all on. As many as you could stack up. I need money to run. And nothing. Didn't even fucking ding, you know, his numbers at all. In fact, I believe they went up a couple of percent. So
to that point, the working paper called White Outgroup Intolerance and the Declining Support for American Democracy may sound very hoity-toity, but this new study suggests that the main threat to our democracy may not be the hardening of political ideology, but the hardening of one particular political ideology. And this is something that we haven't quite experienced before, the harshness of this. And their study finds a correlation between white American intolerance and the support for authoritarian rule, just as I summated before. When intolerant white people fear democracy may benefit marginalized people, they abandon their commitment to democracy. So these two people who studied this used information from research projects. It was actually a thing called the World Values Survey, organized by a worldwide network of social scientists, in which polls individuals in numerous countries on a wide range of beliefs and values, based on this from the United States. The authors found that white people who did not want to have immigrants or people of different races living next to them were more likely to be supportive of authoritarianism. For instance, people who said that they did not want to live next door to immigrants or people of another race were more supportive of the idea of military rule, or a strongman type leader who could ignore legislatures, and election results. What does that sound like? The data is used from 1995 to 2011. Interesting, because now we see where this is going.
Sure.
This is before, long before the 2016 run for president. Although Trump's bigotry and his authoritarianism aren't separate problems, but they're wound together as one. When he calls Mexicans rapists, and then he praises like Kim Jong-un, or who's the guy in Venezuela, is that what it is? He is appealing to the same voters. So their paper quotes alt-right neo-fascist leader Richard Spencer. We know who that bastard is, who in a 2013 speech declared, "We need an ethno-state so our people can come home again. We must give up the false dreams of equality and democracy. Ethnic cleansing is impossible as long as marginalized people have enough votes to stop it, but this roadblock appears if you get rid of democracy." Spencer understands that the white rule in the current era essentially requires totalitarianism. That is the logic of fascism. Trump's rise is often presented as a major break with the past and a repudiation of American values, democratic commitments. But in an email, one of these people who studied this pointed out that white intolerance has long served an excuse for and a spark for authoritarian measures. People appear to be fond of the framers' grand vision of liberty and equality for all. But the beauty of the Federalist Papers can't paper over the real measures of exclusion that were baked into their understanding of a limited franchise. Black people, Asians, Native Americans, women were prevented from voting for significant stretches of American history. And now, even today, because of gerrymandering, because of voter restriction, because of your fucking Supreme Court, okay, the tradition of democracy, just for some, exists alongside a tradition of authoritarianism. It doesn't show people rejecting American traditions.
Right.
So much as it shows a preference for the sort of white ethnocentrism that imbued much of the functional form of democracy for the better part of two centuries. This is something that we have kind of talked about off and on, kind of glanced about it for some time. But we are talking about, when we talk about 1,500 missing children, our current immigration laws, actually immigration policies. What we're doing is we're creating, they want to create a white ethno state, nationalist ethno white state. And they are willing to do ethnic cleansing in order to get there. Now, this may sound very harsh and very scary, but there is a reality behind this. And all you have to do is just listen and just watch what they do. The founders in this paper says, supported democracy as long as restricted to white male property owners. That's in practice, the GOP has increasingly been embracing a politics of white resentment tied to disenfranchisement since Nixon's Southern strategy. The GOP pigeonholed itself as part of an aggrieved white people's party. Trump's nativist language made the GOP sympathies more explicit, leading to further erosion of support among non-white voters. Bush won 35% of Hispanic voters in 2000. Trump won only 28%. That's 28% too much. While his showing with Asian American voters was 27%, worse than any winning presidential candidate on record. So the GOP has dug itself into such a hole on this that the most practical effort to stave off these impending losses is to disenfranchise the votes of the same ethnic racial groups against whom GOP messaging has been stoking animosity. So a party that is built on demonizing and attacking marginalized people is a party that will have to disenfranchise those same people if it is to survive. So social intolerance isn't just leading to GOP support as we know it. It's leading to preferences in favor of the kind of candidate the GOP ultimately nominated and supported for president. Embracing the politics of white identity, GOP made Trump possible, likely to make more Trump-like candidates successful in the future. And the idea is that this is what they are going to do going forward. Trump will be the model of the GOP going forward. This is what we have to go against. So get up off the ground, get up off your back, put the punch back into the fight. We've got work ahead of us.
Swear a little, make them uncomfortable. Raise your voice. Be angry. There is...
Anger is...
Look at how well anger is working for them with the bullshit. Anger thrown behind truth can change fucking history. Right now, all we're doing is driving towards another fucking Somalia. You know, yeah. we're headed towards Bosnia. I don't think that we're quite at Rwanda. I don't think that we could lose our shit quite enough to start, you know, macheting each other to death. But Jesus Christ, you look at the dystopian versions of what goes on. Do I see mass imprisonment for those that don't kowtow to the main administration or the prevailing religion? Yeah, I could see that without really getting worked up about it anymore. And I used to roll my eyes when I was young. And it's not crazy talk. It's just what the fuck happens now.
When you push until we push back. And to your point, Jeff, is that they are pushing as hard as they can, expecting us to be so shocked and awed that we will not properly respond. Just watch us.
Hey, guess what? We are about to enter our third decade of not doing, saying, or being strong enough to affect change. What they expect us to do is exactly what they're getting. Obama took war crimes off the fucking table. What did that get him? Not a goddamn thing. He took war crimes, crimes against humanity, off the table as a way to be conciliatory and to try and bridge between his group and the right. And what did that get him? 8 fucking years of fuck all and fight. So I get it. I know we need to push back. I don't see it happening. You know, the revolution that needs to come has to start at such a grassroots level. And we had an opportunity to do that in 2016. And we fucking blew it. And listening and reading and going through with the folks that we know and that we love, whether they be, you know, a hill or whether they be a burn, We haven't learned a fucking thing. We haven't learned one goddamn lesson. We had people that stayed home because they couldn't vote for the lesser of two evils. To them, that wasn't enough. That it was like, well, this is super evil, and that's kind of evil. Kind of evil is way better than super evil, but I'm annoyed that my long shot candidate, who by rules that were written over the last 12 fucking decades, you know, I don't like, I'm going to go ahead and call the system corrupt. That is unfair. Yeah, it's totally unfair.
How did that work out for us?
Well, it hasn't yet. We got Trump in the thing. And exactly. But people are still fighting that fight.
We have to get past this.
Well, okay, but you and I can say that out loud. But those people that we're talking about, they're not making any fucking move, no matter how much you yell at them, no matter how nice you are. Because I've tried being nice, man. I've tried being nice. I've tried to explain. I've been fucking calm and rational and used my Democrat logic brain and mouth. And what has it done? Nothing. They talk shit about me the way the fucking Republicans talk shit about me for giving a shit. And it's we are in the middle of needing desperately to overthrow on every level, from the municipalities all the way to the fucking DNC, those people that are running the show, and replace them with not children, mind, but at the very least, younger people in their 30s and 40s that have some kind of a fucking idea about what it means to get mad enough to fight the fuck back, as opposed to those that just want to roll over, wet themselves, and try really hard not to make the Republicans mad, because they sure get mean and hurt feelings when they're mad. And that's who's running the show right now, are people who are worried more about their fucking feelings and or wallets and less about the history of people in America that deserve to have people fighting for them. That's where we're at. You know,
that's fine.
But, you know, that revolution, fuck if I know how the fuck to start it. Jesus Christ. All I've done in the 20 years I've worked in Democratic politics is on every level of emotionality, from screaming and yelling to sending fucking fruit baskets, begged for responsible behavior, begged for effective communication. Written plan after plan, shown, actually been given the fucking reins of a communications apparatus and shown that this way wins seats. It's still been run off, still been marginalized, still been insulted, still had my career started over again by people that have learned how to make money in the status quo, or even worse, especially in Utah, these supposed Democrats that have learned how to make money on losing, but winning is not as profitable here. They don't make as much money because of the gerrymandering and how effective that is. Once you're in, you don't need these assholes that have found a way to take tens of thousands of dollars from candidates that don't have it. You know, we're just as susceptible to greed as they are. The only difference is that once we get what we want, we make sure that poor kids can have fucking school lunch, free school lunch. You know, we don't write in the donut hole into the senior citizens drug plan. You know, I mean, that's just it. It's like we're fucking around so bad. We have a stack of accomplishments. And right now our accomplishments are we didn't commit that fuck up, but we didn't stop it either. So what is it? I mean, what am I asking for? Basically, I am asking for the 5 hours I need to get a nice national pack started, and then somebody to fucking fund me to start making some effective noise outside of both Democratic and Republican control. This message brought to you by Pissed Off Jeff, who's just sitting there mad and wants to tell you the truth because he's not running for fuck all. But you idiots, you're voting for dipshit. Tell me that wouldn't be effective.
Your approach is to elect the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, Howard Dean style, progressives who get shit done.
Yeah.
Progressives and liberals, proud liberals, were able to get things done. But here's a little bit of insight that I kind of like hit me. I mean, we'll wrap this up because because of time. watching the returns on Saturday on the Irish referendum that finally decriminalized or just simply said to the Catholic Church, fuck off, you're not making any more rules about women's autonomy.
Now, of course, someone grab a vacuum.
This is, you're not going to do this anymore. Here's the deal. There was a politician, and they were from a conservative party, okay, but not exactly the kind of conservative party that we have in the United States.
I don't care much for foreigners.
This female party person, it was party called the Fiona Fail.
I don't care much for foreigners.
And what was interesting about it was she was not in step with the rest of her party. And she said there was very little action by any. When this referendum came up, see, this is the reason why I think that it's more the anger and the people are going to say are going to lead first. Because this is what happened in Ireland. This came from an entirely different place. It didn't come from their legislature. And anybody who was in the legislature, no matter what party that you were, even among the more conservative, didn't even come out and say anything. They're all not just only terrified of losing their seat, but they're also terrified of the established powers. So what the people did is they actually knocked over, just like they did with equal marriage, just like they did with LGBT people being able to self-identify in a separate referendum. This referendum came out and people just said, although it's not perfect, there will be restrictions on how much when abortion can be had. But it is a
12 weeks
break. It is a complete break from the dark ages, the horror of the Catholic Church controlling the lives of people and controlling the bodily autonomy of women in Ireland. They finally just said,
one of the things
off.
That American journalism isn't touching on that is the stranglehold that the Catholic Church had on Ireland and the Irish has been lessened over the last decade to this point to where this could happen because they have been so mired down in all of the child sex abuse scandals that have happened, especially in Ireland, you know. And that has stolen the credibility from the church, that when the church tries to stand up and talk about the morality of Christ, and in the meantime, every single ranking religious, like cardinal down, you know, has basically been inside a child in a way that should not happen, because that's not what Jesus meant by love the little children.
Jeez.
Well, he didn't.
I know. Well, look, I'm a former Catholic. I know it. Yeah. I know it very, very well.
We're just following the word of Christ. No, that's not what he meant.
I'm former Catholic. I'm former. I mean, my both sides. My mom and dad are very, like Irish. You know, they come from really strong Irish identity. But here's the thing. The politician had said that there was no movement. Nobody was going to say anything in any of the political parties at all. It all came from the people. And she also said there was intimidation by other members of her own party to her. You better not say anything. We'll knock you down. You better not say anything. We're going to make sure you pay for it. And they were like, you know, the report, you know, the anchors were going, you know, this is serious. And he goes, yes, there was every aspect of this was to protect the status quo, to which led me to believe that politicians, and I'm talking not the good people who go in and represent us and work very hard for us. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about established business politicians whose job is to create a protected class of themselves. They themselves will perpetuate their existence, their business, Orrin Hatch, their businesses, you name any typical longstanding politician who's made it their career, and have they really moved the needle very much on anything at all? No. Those are the people that I'm talking about who create the status quo, and that is what you were talking about before, by which needs to be broken. And the only way it can be broken is because the people will lead. the people will lead and make those changes. The politicians aren't going to do anything. They're protected. They're a protected class. By removing them from power, by standing up and actually saying something, maybe the new people who are in power can actually, for a little bit of time, make these changes. And as long as you keep refreshing that, you have a chance. That is my optimistic point of view about that.
I admire your ability to have optimism. I don't know if I envy it or not, but I certainly admire it. Because that takes bigger balls than it does for me to just sit over here in worst case scenario land.
Well, that's the crux of the biscuit.
And now I want a British cookie. I think we could.
It's not the lower rung on the Duggar DNA, but nevertheless, go on.
Sure. Nah, I'm good. We do. I got a heart out. But
I know.
If you know what I mean. But no, this is good. This is good. We started out with a little bit of a pity party about pity parties. And now we've basically once again reminded those folks that listen to us why we aren't actually affecting a quick change. Because we think in ways that are effective, and most people don't like that because they don't think that way. They think about what they can get away with, you know?
And I'd just like to let people know that if you do listen to this just for the pity party, go fuck yourself.
We'll give that a shot anyway.
I like that.
Hey, who fucks me better than me? You know what I mean?
What?
I know what I like. I know all the moves. You know, I barely have to work to perform the seduction at this point. Could tell me to go fuck myself. I'll have a great afternoon. You know, tell me to go fuck a newt. That is terrifying. You wanna make it stick? There you go.
Yeah, that's really awful.
So
that's...
this Memorial Day, as we record this, I won't be dropping this for a couple more days. You probably might. But
I'll drop it like tonight or tomorrow, but we can talk later in the week.
Oh, sure.
If
I could find it, but just remembering that this day, Memorial Day, 20 years ago, Phil Hartman's wife shot the shit out of him.
That's true. That did happen. That was a shocker.
So just go ahead and choke on that for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really sure but how to go out on this, but
I just tried to take us out on a dead Phil Hartman, and apparently that didn't work. So it's all up to you now, pal.
I don't have a dead Phil Hartman or anything, but
Constance.
John.
So, my betrothed, how go the wedding plans?
Oh, John, my father is sparing no expense. Boiled beef for every guest, fish head stew, old cheese, and men's attire will be provided by Gentleman's Warehouse.
You're going to fancy the way you look. This I vouchsafe.
What the fuck is that from?
Family Guy. They did Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, okay. It sounded like they were doing Futurama with Family Guy.
They did Sherlock Holmes, and so they're going back 110, 20 years, and they cut away to this. Guy looks like George Zimmerman. Yeah, or George Zimmer, not Zimmerman. Holy Yikes. Fuck. George Zimmer. He delivers the line. This I vouchsafe.
Very nice. Very, very nice.
Yes. We will pick up this other thing a little bit later in the week, but yeah, man, this has been a joy. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you, buddy.
Labor.
Bye.
Just trying to find some place where a man might get some rest. Wash the tears from my eyes and the blood from my vest. One lonesome saddle. One long and lonesome ride. woman unkind. Walked into the saloon on my feet that felt like lead. Cold steel hammer pounding into the back of my head. I raise up my glass to the quick and to the dead. Sing a yeah, heavy and a bottle. One lonesome saddle, one long and lonesome ride, one lonely cow, finding a woman unkind. It left my lips. I felt her hand upon me. Her smile, it was so warm, but her eyes were so cold. She says to me now, won't you please walk beside me? I just shut my mouth and I did as I was told. One lonesome saddle, one long and lonesome ride, one lonely cowboy, pining a woman, cool heart. Woman, pining a woman unkind.